Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 62 of season 8 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast where we foobar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Eddie Eith of the AP Fanboy YouTube channel. Welcome back to the show, Eddie.
Hello. Hello.
So glad to have you back here.
Yep. Glad to be here.
Especially when we get to see a shell-shocked Nathan Fillion, just staring us right in the face. That's how this starts.
Absolutely.
Are you a Nathan Fillion fan?
Who isn't?
Are you a Firefly fan?
I watched Firefly back in the day. Can't say I really followed Castle or the Rookie, but. I don't mind him. I think he's a good actor. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Again, he gets this one really right with the dumbfounded look on his face.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And he's one of the great. I feel like he's a great proponent of Comic-Cons. You could see the way he interacts with fans is
okay, but that's largely because of Firefly.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's true. Not because of his role here in Saving Private.
No.
Mm-hmm. So minute 62 begins with Miller continuing to talk to Ryan and ends with Ryan still being confused. Mm. So we ended things yesterday with Miller. Starting to, as you phrased it, rip off the Band-Aid. And, he said, we have orders to come. And then today he continues with the line and says, get you, because you're going home. And it's just a very, I know that Miller is being very straightforward with the way that he's saying it. But it sounds like, okay, you've won a prize. Your brothers have been killed in combat, and therefore you're going home. What do we got? What do we have for little Jimmy Ryan behind curtain number one?
Yeah.
It's the way that he phrases this. I just didn't, because now you get to go home.
Yeah, well, so. And it's also because everyone in the unit is already resenting Ryan for the fact that they're going all out to bring him home.
Right.
It's true. And they have to stay in the theater.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's true. It makes a lot of sense. But, I love how, Hamill just puts his hand on his shoulder.
Oh, Ted Danson's great.
He's trying to find a way to comfort him, but he doesn't really know how to comfort him either. Mm-hmm. Because you also have the idea of, why would a captain be friendly with, a private,
yeah,
that type of thing. It's like, on the one hand, it's supposed to be like a father figure, but on the other hand, there's still some sort of distance between us for this to work properly.
Yeah, and immediately when Ryan shoves his face in Hamill's chest, and Hamill shoots Miller a look that is perfect. Just immediately says, really? I've got all this going on. I've got to be in charge of this crew. And you're going to drop this on my plate?
That's right. It's very true.
Just
because of the assumption is that, we could be wrong about this, but Hamill is probably a father, probably, at this point.
Safe to assume.
So he's therefore, he's old enough to know that, okay, he has to do what he can to try and comfort, this young soldier, even though this soldier has now been completely ruined, I guess you can say, because of everything that's going on. Because it's not a question of seeing friends die in combat. It's the idea that here's a very personal thing that is being dropped, a personal bomb being dropped on him, basically. you know, that type of thing. And, you know, Ryan doesn't even know how to react to you. He goes, oh my God, my brothers are dead. I was supposed to take them fishing when we got home. And, you know, and you can even see the tears and the sweat and all just like come off of him, you know, throughout this whole thing. You know, because again, it's probably not that hot in this area. I mean, we've talked about this in the past about what the weather must have been like in Normandy in June, but it probably wasn't that humid.
Okay.
You know, so this, you know, he looks like he's got a lot, he's sweating a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe just from, you know, from his little trot, you know, down the, you know, down to meet with the captains.
Yeah.
I don't know. And, you know, we see as much as possible Hamill is trying to comfort him and let him put his head on his shoulder type of thing. And, you know, he's like, all right, you're going to be all right. You know, we'll get you through this, you know, stuff like that. But we just hear a lot of sniffling and sobbing.
Yeah,
that's the word. I kept thinking snobbing. So the word that kept coming into my head was snobbing. Sobbing. No, it's sobbing.
It's a sad moment.
mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a sad moment that they're going to flip on us shortly, but yeah. Not today. You know, and then Miller just turns to him and, you know, tries to give him his condolences and goes, I'm so sorry, James. I can't tell you how much I am. And, you know, again, this is one of those things in this movie, and there are a lot of movies that do things like this where it's sort of a surprise that will only work the first time you watch the movie. You know, because Miller is completely sincere at this yeah. point. You know, because he believes that he's now delivering this news to the right person.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nicely done from that perspective. Even though, again, for those of us who've seen this before, we know that there's something coming up that's going to completely throw everything on its
You know. And you begin to see the other men react and start to feel sympathy for Ryan.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Because which is also good because, you know, up until now, the men have been complaining that why do we have to go do this or anything like that. But then now they see, okay, what type of reaction is someone going to have when something like this happens?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's real.
You know, well, it's definitely real because, you know, Ryan well, believes it's real.
I think that's for the men, it's real now. Before, it was just, you know, a name that they were trying to find. And now it's turned into a person who's bawling their eyes out.
Right. And they probably put themselves in that type of situation also at this point. Like, how would I react to this type of thing? You know, whether they have brothers or whether they have siblings, it doesn't really make a difference. But when you finally see someone having to deal with this type of I would even venture and use the word trauma. You know, it changes you because you look at it and you're like, all right, well, maybe it's not as mm-hmm. clear cut as I thought. You know, we are dealing with real people here. We are dealing with people's lives, people's emotions and things like that. So. You know, they're finally getting to see it. And we talked a little bit about this yesterday, but at this point, they also show us all the different characters, their reactions to this whole thing. You know, we first see Upham, who's looking over in a very shady fashion or whatever it is. And he's like saying to himself, all right, do I really want to be a part of this? You know, I think it's part of that. You know, the voyeuristic aspect of it, that on the one hand, you want to be a fly on the wall, but you, on the other hand, you don't want to be a fly on the wall.
Yeah.
That type of thing. It's like, I want to hear this, mm-hmm. but I don't really want to be here, you know, for this whole thing. And I love how we can see Hill in the background, not really caring. You know, you have Paul Giamatti there just, you know, talking it over with, mm-hmm. with one of the other guys.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't really care anymore. I've done my part. It's now someone else's job
Absolutely.
to move forward at this point. Again, Hill has done his share of exposing the Germans in the area. So you can't really complain from that perspective also. You know, good old Paul Giamatti just doing his thing, using his slapstick humor and, you know, being able to take down the wall. So it's, yeah, nicely done from that perspective. And after we see Upham, then we see Mellish, who also doesn't really know how to deal with this, because you see him looking off to the side and then looking back and then looking off to the side, you know, that type of thing. And then we get Wade also, who's also just staring, trying to figure out, you know, how am I supposed to react to this whole thing? You know, am I supposed to get to have sympathy for him? And Ryan just keeps continuing to bawl and bawl and bawl. And then he, you know, moves back. And then he turns to Miller and he goes, how did they die? And Miller just says to him, matter-of-factly, they were killed in action. And then he just said, once again, Nathan Fillion has this amazing look on his face. And he's like, that can't be. No. And he's like shaking his head back and forth. And he goes, there. And you can see that you know, at this point, Hamill is giving him a reassuring, you know, touch on the shoulder with the whole thing. Still trying to, you know, okay, you're in denial. This is the situation. You don't have to deal with it. And, you know, we're going to have to wait until tomorrow to find out specifically what the issue is here. But, you know, the way that they do it, I mean, Ryan just is so
Rob,
confused
the way
about
you're
what's
leaving
going
the listeners
on here.
Hanging here.
Well, come on. It's not me. I didn't cut the movie a minute this way. You know, that's the way it is. Why am I at fault for that? This is what you know, Michael Caine and Steven Spielberg decided to do. They wanted to cut this minute
they
at this
knew.
Point. So
that, they knew.
We take it as they get it.
Your listeners.
That's right. Isn't that the way it should be? Come on, we all know that when people are making movies, they're thinking about what's going to happen when somebody will be viewing their movie and going through it minute by minute.
Yeah, absolutely. Just like in comic books, it's all about the page turns. Here, it's where do we cut off between second 50, 59 and 60? You know, it's...
That's right. And here it's how do we cut between 62 and 63? You know, that's all it is. It makes sense. You know, it makes me always wonder how many real filmmakers are aware offhand is Joe Johnston, because he's been on three different shows of movies that he's done. I mean, a friend of the show, Jim O'Kane. So he did The Rocketeer and he had him on there. And then he was a co-host on October Sky. And I know that about a year from now, maybe the end of 2025, he's going to be doing, Joe Johnston is going to be doing Captain America with him.
Oh,
so
okay.
It, for me, it's just really cool knowing that a, you know, a director who has, you know, who made the movie, like if Spielberg was on here with us, that type of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, we'd be looking at things from a very different perspective.
I'd love to see him do the frequency minute by minute.
Joe Johnston was the director of Frequency?
I believe so.
Really? I first of all, I love Frequency. I think it's a great movie. Except the one bad thing about Frequency from my perspective is
I apologize. It was not, I was thinking Gregory Hoblit. I don't know. I don't know why I thought Joe Johnson directed it. I apologize.
Okay.
My bad.
That's fine. Mm-hmm. No problem. But again, I love talking about Frequency anyway. Mm-hmm. The one thing that I hate about Frequency is the fact that if you watch I remember when we rented it to rented the DVD back in must have been 2000, 2001, after it came out, and a whole group of us that were sitting there, and we're like, okay, before we watch the movie, let's watch the trailer. And watch the trailer, and the trailer gives away so many of the plot points.
Yes.
And then you watch the movie, and you're like, oh, crap, mm-hmm. I knew that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's...
Which is why I don't watch trailers before I watch the movie.
Well, you got to remember, especially at that point... Trailers were not meant to be watched over and over again on YouTube. The whole purpose of the trailer is that you would see a trailer and then you'd have 3 to 6 months to completely forget everything you saw in the trailer, but just remember that you wanted to see the movie.
That's correct. That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays it doesn't work that way. Okay, so maybe you can explain this to me. As a movie fan nowadays, okay, as a fanboy, who deals with specifically you deal with trailers. Okay. So have they changed? Why have they changed the way that what they're putting in trailers? If they know that people are going to be watching them over and over, and it's going to basically ruin the movie for them.
Well, I think part of it is because I think a lot of times fanboys can't help themselves. And you see, spoiler culture, everyone wants to find out everything, also they're not making the trailers for people like you and I, something like the fact that Superman, I know that's coming out July 11, 2025. I don't need to see a trailer. James Gunn told me it's happening July 11, 2025. I will be there at the theater. The trailer is meant to get my grandmother and my to get my grandmother or my 20-year-old cousin who has no interest in Superman, but to maybe give some kind of a peek where, okay, maybe there's an actor they like, or there's a storyline. It's to try to convince people who aren't obvious targets to the movie to gain some kind of interest. Yeah.
Okay, I understand that. But again, you want to let people, gain an interest. But if you're going to be, telling them all the different spoilers of the movie, I mean, again, a perfect example, and I've mentioned this to a lot of people over the years, is Terminator Genesis. Now, I didn't watch the trailer before I watched the movie, which I was very glad about, because then I was surprised at what happens to John Connor. But, but then when I watched the trailer afterwards, I'm like, oh my God, they've given away so much here. And like, so what's the point of doing that? That's not, is that what's going to make your grandmother go see the movie? That she knows that something like that's going to happen? Or is it that, they just, the people aren't thinking when they do these things.
Yeah, I think it's the kind of thing where people need more of a hook. You can't just tell me. And I think a lot of it is overcompensating. They feel like we can't just tell them it's a Terminator movie. We need to give them some extra thing to hook them in so that, oh, maybe we're going to, give you a hint that John Connor is a bad guy, or we're going to make John Connor a Terminator. And give that extra little hint that'll say, oh, this is different from the other Terminator, so that's maybe what I'm going to go see what this is about.
I understand that, but as
oh, and I fanboy and I, like I agree
you,
with you.
It drives me nuts.
I think they give away way too much. I prefer trailers that focus on tone or character more than plot. It's just fair. Different approaches. Some people, like Robert Zemeckis, gave away the twist to What Lies Beneath in the trailer. Right. some people feel like, well, it doesn't matter if I tell you what happens, because you're going to want to come see it play, see how it plays out over 2 hours. Yeah.
Okay. There is something to that. I mean, again, I do obviously see trailers when I go to the movie.
Yeah.
Because they don't give you, you still
oh,
watch
I,
the trailer.
I had,
at that
I had
point. But as you said, the point is that it's a trailer for a movie that's going to come out in 3 to 6 months from now. Yes. So I'm going to forget most of it by then.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, and then you just got to avoid the TV commercials the week of, because those usually spoil everything too. But
right. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. I rarely watch network TV, so I don't have that much of an issue. You know. So yeah. Okay. So thank you for shedding a little bit of light on that. That helps me a little bit to get a better understanding as to the stupidity of the whole idea. You know, which is why I'm a big fan of teaser trailers. You know, which are 30 seconds and you don't really get to see much. That's all you need. And you're like, it drives you nuts.
A little bit of moody, those character are intro, maybe just a 15-second action beat, and we're good.
Sure. I completely agree with you on that. Right. So as Ryan is once again very, very confused and in denial of everything that's going on,
I think we covered it pretty well.
So did you have anything else you wanted to say about this minute?
I think we covered it pretty well.
All right. Great. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Tom Hanks Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five Tom Hanks performances. So once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
All right. I'm going to it's funny because I did want to give – I'm going to give one honorable mention here because it's the first movie I remember seeing Tom Hanks in that I find memorable, but I couldn't find – I couldn't quite get it into my top five, which is Dragnet.
Okay.
And that's because my number five is, I think, the better of his sort of quirky sad sack 80s characters, which is Turner from Turner and Hooch.
Okay.
Number four is You've Got Mail. Number three is Representative Charles Wilson from Charlie Wilson's War. Number two is Apollo, James Lovell in Apollo 13. And number one is Jimmy Dugan in A League of Their Own.
That is a great list. That is very
Yes.
nice.
Yes. Yeah.
No Saving Private Ryan on the list, but all right, that's okay. I'll forgive you this season.
Hey, Roger Hornsby was my manager. I know you don't have cursing on here, but
you can curse all you want.
But that's to me, I think is there's one of the crying in cinema history.
I think I've actually used it on the game at some point this season. I believe so.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
I'm trying to remember which Jimmy Dugan one I did. I know that I did, because when Tierney was on, because Tierney did A League of Their Own, inning by inning.
So, okay. Inning by inning.
Yeah, so it was 9 episodes. That's the idea of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. No, actually, maybe I just had the one that said "Kiss My Big Hairy Ass." That one we use that one, and we use the one about why baseball is so hard. It's supposed to be hard. If it wasn't hard, everyone would do it. The hard is what makes it great.
Yep.
So those are the ones that I gave Tierney for again obvious reasons. All right. That is a great list. Thank you very much for that. So, sure. Eddie, why don't you once again tell people where they can find you?
You can find me on X at Eddie Eith. That's EDDIEEITH. And on YouTube at AP Fanboy. I'm an aspiring professional fanboy. I've been watching TV and movies for my entire life. I think it's about time I got paid for it, where I mainly do movie trailer reaction videos and just random musings about movies and fandom.
Okay. What does it mean that you do trailer reaction movies?
I mean, I
Trailer reaction reviews. You watch people online as they react to trailers
no, I react to
and talk
trailers.
about that? You react to trailers.
Yes. Yeah, I watch movies. I watch new and it's all kinds of stuff. Of course, the big tentpole blockbusters, but also I watch trailers for awards buzz movies and even like those small little indies that you may only find on demand or that you don't even know that are in theaters that show up on streaming services like Tubi or the Roku channel 6 months later.
Oh, wow. Okay. Very cool.
Yeah.
And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. If you want to send me an email, you can send me one to moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. I will be back again tomorrow. We will be back tomorrow. But until then, earn this. Earn it.
My solitude.